Hey, Tiff.
Hey, Steven.
It's September.
Yeah? Yep, it's September.
One, how did that happen? How is it September?
Oh, I don't even want to talk about how it happens. It's just too fast these days.
It is. It gets faster. But September is also Childhood Cancer Awareness Month.
It is.
It is. Every year, Relay FM and ATP and the Comparable, this sort of family of podcast of which we are part, raise money for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. I want to tell you a little bit about St. Jude. I want to talk to you a little bit about childhood cancer. It's estimated that more than 400,000 kids worldwide develop cancer each year, but nearly half of them are never diagnosed. And as you may imagine, this is really uneven around the globe. So here in the United States, more than 4 out of 5 children survive cancer, thanks to the hard work of St. Jude. But in many developing countries, that stat is tragically reversed, with fewer than 1 out of 5 children diagnosed with cancer surviving. And that means that the most significant predictor of whether a child will survive cancer or not is where that child lives. And so in March of 2018, St. Jude became the first and only World Health Organization collaborating center for childhood cancer. They have this really ambitious goal that I love, to raise the survival rate of the 6 most common childhood cancers to 60% by 2030. That's possible because people like us donate to St. Jude, donate to this life-saving work. So you can learn more and donate at stjude.org/relay. We've got a bunch of fun stuff going on the month of September. If you make a single gift over $100, you get this really cool sticker pack. We're doing a big live show on September 17th. The details are there on the page. And I should say, if your company matches donations, send me an email and we can have that amount added to the campaign. You can email me at steven@relay.fm. So thank you so much for those of you who have already donated. The campaign is going super well, and we're excited to talk about this every year.
Please donate to childhood cancer. It's super important and helpful and amazing, and go do it. Also, survival, we can rope this in. Dwight, cold open, eating a whole bunch of survival food. So this is really the perfect episode that you should go donate to childhood cancer. And we will talk about the episode Todd Packer, which is episode 18 of season 7 and originally aired on February 24th, 2011.
I was reading about this episode. It actually was the lowest rated episode when this was airing on television. And I always find those numbers interesting, right? Like, I personally don't know what else was going on the last week of February in 2011, but it's not the worst episode of the season. I think this episode's pretty good. It's weird, but Todd Packer is a weird character, but it sort of jumped out at me that it was the lowest rated at time of airing.
Do you think some people just saw the title and they're like, yeah, nah?
I think that maybe was it. Because, I mean, Todd Packer has been in and out of the show for years. He's this traveling salesman, so he shows up sometimes. But yeah, maybe so.
Maybe the idea of an entire episode all about Todd Packer was just like too much.
And I found it interesting that they named it after him. I mean, occasionally you would see character names show up in episodes, but I think it's the only one like straight up named after a character.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. I was I just like quickly, you know, kind of scrolled through, but you know, yeah, they'll be like Dwight's this or
Scott's Tots
or Andy's play, right? Like there's other stuff. Don't even say Scott's Tots. Don't even. But like, yeah, it's not like a full character name. You know, we don't get like the Ryan Howard episode.
Yeah.
So yeah, Todd Packer. Packer, I hardly know her.
You gotta stop. You have to stop.
Okay.
We touched on the cold open, but we should talk about that.
It's more of like an expired open.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Thanks.
It is turnover time in Dwight's emergency preparedness rationing. So he has all these cans of food that I guess are in an underground bunker, which he very only sort of vaguely tells us where it is. And, you know, you got to make sure that stuff is fresh, because in the end of the world comes, you don't want to get some sort of terrible like GI disease because you ate expired canned tuna. And so he's got to plow through all this food and people are watching him eat. It's a bit of a scene that's drawn a crowd. But then Jim just starts mocking it. And what I find to be a pretty, actually kind of an unfunny Jim prank. And I like that Pam basically just gets up and walks out as it's going on.
I love this for Dwight because it's very, okay, so it's very Doomsday Preppers, which obviously Dwight would, if that show were around while this was around, there would be an episode about Dwight watching Doomsday Preppers. But what I really like is that Dwight is an even better like farmer prepper than probably actual preppers are, because he is going through his stock and he like probably has on his calendar, it's time to eat all the food, like start eating the food now because you only have a few months left. So it's like he actually is turning over I can't even turn over my cabinets like in my regular house. I can't manage to like keep track of when everything gets expired. And we have Dwight here with, you know, giant cans of tomatoes. And I don't know what's in that big, like, that big jug. I don't, it looks fuzzy. I don't know what was in there, but there's nothing a lot good of stuff going on. But he's going to eat it all. He is dedicated. He's even drinking, like, the brine out of, like, the pickled okra cans.
I did wonder, I was like, well, why is all this stuff expiring at the same time? Like, wouldn't the better plan be to have some sort of, like, rotation where like every 3 months, you know, you have to replace a section of stuff or something?
Well, I mean, certain things have different shelf lives, right?
That's true too. I didn't consider that.
I don't know.
But my thought was when Dwight built this, he fully stocked it from day one. And so things just naturally expire at the same time. Like Dwight is not one to build or acquire some sort of doomsday bunker and then like, oh, I'll slowly over time put rations in it. Like he bought a truck, like a tractor trailer truck full of canned food all at once and stocked it all at once. I'm convinced.
Oh, yeah. I see that happening. I mean, that's how this happens, right? Like, yeah, it makes sense based on his age. We know that he's been at his desk for 10 years. So some of the tomatoes were 8 years old. Here we go. We're doing doomsday math now. So if he was prepping the bunker, then yeah, it would be about time.
So we got to talk about Jim's prank. It's not really a prank. I don't know what this is.
Oh, in the cold open?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's more of just it's a time killer with Dwight. Jim is testing Dwight to the limits of how long he will sit there. And as we see Pam leave first because she totally recognizes what Jim is going to be doing and spending his afternoon doing. And I think that it's one of those standoff things. It's like, who's going to break first? Because Jim starts asking this ridiculous question. Dwight keeps answering him. And now it's like, who will break first? So it's just, I think it's one of those like ridiculous, you know, brotherly standoff test of the wills here.
Be assured, this day will come. It's just a matter of time. Could be 1 month, could be 2 months.
3 months.
Could be.
4 months.
I can see that happening, yes.
8 months.
That's a realistic timeline.
11 months.
Perhaps.
Okay, wait, now really think hard about this one. 1 year.
I could see that as a very real possibility.
494 months.
I could see that happening.
I do like when we come back to it, everyone else is gone. Like, this has been going on for a long time. He's just asking Dwight, like, when is this going to be? And every suggestion, Dwight's like, yeah, that's plausible. I could see that happening.
When Dwight discusses the doomsday scenario in which everyone will be pounding at his bunker door to be let in and he won't let anybody in because they all made fun of his food, he points out that Meredith will probably be okay. And I think I agree with him.
Meredith will do well. Kevin will die. Pam will be taken as slave. And Jim will be safe because he will be basically brought onto the staff of some warlord to tell jokes. He's going to be the jester.
I can see this scenario. I can see that playing out.
He's actually pretty complimentary to the Halperts.
He is.
I guess. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen to Pam. Probably nothing good, but.
But, I mean, their friendship is showing a little bit here.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. On to our main plot. This is a pretty simple episode. We've got an A plot and a B plot.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Todd Packard coming in off the road, and we just launch right into this. He's in Michael's office. saying, look, it's time for me to come in. He's just ready to rein it in a little bit.
I really thought I was becoming too much of a womanizer. I realized I had shirts in 5 different women's houses.
Still not seeing the problem now.
All right. Truth is, I got a couple love bumps on my ding dong. So I was like, oh, game over.
We found out later that he has a daughter who is in the Scranton area. So he's going to spend more time with her. But Holly has to sign off on this because Holly is still the HR manager. And it seems at first like Todd is going to really be nice. Like he is nice to Holly. They have a pretty quick meeting. Holly basically signs off on it because Michael wrote this like glowing recommendation to make this move. But the staff is immediately unhappy with the possibility of Todd coming back.
Holly, you approved this?
Oh, yes, I did. I think Todd's going to make a great addition to the staff.
You did approve it.
Yeah.
One thing we find out in Holly's interview with Todd is that like he has really good sales numbers. So that was a bit of a surprise for me that like his sales are good enough to be like, all right, yeah, your sales numbers speak for themselves and Michael likes you. So come on back. I thought that was an interesting little tidbit about it. I thought that he would just be kind of average.
If you were into a Cernit kind of vibe, like I could see Todd being good in certain situations. Right?
Oh, yeah. Selling to like bros. Selling to the misogynist. Yeah.
Selling to bros. And, you know, he drives a Corvette. Like, I mean, I was a little surprised because we haven't ever heard about this. But at the same time, I was like, yeah, I could see it. And Holly doesn't see any problem with it. She doesn't know the backstory of when Todd has been here in the past, how it's gone. And basically people in the bullpen are unhappy about it. And it gets even worse because Michael tells Dwight, you got to go back to the annex. You know, this was Todd's desk for 12 years before it was yours. And we know it's been Dwight's for 10. So Todd's been with the company at least 22 years. He's like, hey, he's back off the road and give him his old desk. We get the first glimmer of the old Packer here because they're like under the desk looking for where Todd said he carved his name into it. And then he just proceeds to hump them as they're under the desk. So, you know, he's still the same old Todd Packer.
And then everyone kind of confronts Holly.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Don't what's up us. You think you're so cute with your pretty blonde hair.
Whoa, pull it back. Why did you hire Todd Packer?
He's seriously awful.
Michael's recommendation was glowing. And honestly, he's been nothing but nice to me.
That's how he gets you to take off your panties.
Why are you nodding?
United Front.
That's kind of the end of it for a little while, but very quickly in this episode, with Todd being there for just one day, he definitely starts to show his true colors. And it becomes very apparent to Holly that he is not a good presence to have around the office.
It kind of comes to her attention firsthand in the kitchen, where she's at the table with a couple other people. And she brings up like, hey, it's going to be nice for you to see your daughter, spend time with her. And he complains about his daughter and uses a word that I'm not comfortable saying on a podcast. It's really pretty shocking, I think, to Holly. And she's like, well, you know, some people have phases, and like very clearly Todd is out of line here. And this is also when we have friction with Kevin.
Yeah, your life is so insane. You should write a book.
Since when did you learn how to read?
I do know how to read, though.
Yeah, you know how to read a menu. This guy.
He's right. I mean, I could lose some weight.
Kevin, in sumo culture, you'd be considered a promising up-and-comer.
You know, Kevin, I think, is very impressed by Todd's lifestyle, or maybe the lifestyle, at least, that Todd projects when he's in the office. And it's like, okay, now Todd is just like fully back into Todd mode. And now Holly has seen it firsthand as opposed to just having complaints from staff.
And now Holly has something to talk to Michael about. And she brings up the whole idea of that Todd really isn't that nice of a person.
Are you jealous of him? Because you think he's funnier than you? funny.
I don't think he's funnier than me.
Oh, he's funnier than me.
He's not funny at all.
Michael and Holly kind of get into it because Michael wants Holly to like Todd because they've been friends for so, quote unquote, friends. I don't really think that they're friends, but what Michael had as companionship and friendship before is not what he has now. And I think that that's what this whole episode highlights, where we are seeing in multiple episodes, we're seeing Michael confront parts of himself from the past, whether that's like what he previously liked, what he previously valued, like his movie. And it's pitted up against Holly, every single one of these things. And we have to see him slowly knock down these toxic parts of his past in order to move on with his future with Holly. And I think that that's what the whole purpose of this episode is we see him confronting this person where he would just kind of let Todd Packer do whatever he wants. When he arrives back in the office, makes jokes, doesn't, you know, shut him down, doesn't tell him he's being out of line, you know, just kind of goes along with it, has these fake laughs. And now he is being confronted with, like, with Holly telling Michael that Todd is not funny. He's not funny. He's not nice. He's not a good guy. This isn't someone you should be, you know, idolizing or spending time with or promoting in any way. And at first, Michael is put off by this, but I think he, like, the whole transformation of Michael really comes out in Holly's view and, like, Holly's showing him of, like, who Todd really is.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt other people have said this to Michael, right? His whole staff basically just said it, but it takes Holly saying it for it to sort of land. But I like this. I like this a lot in conjunction with the previous episode where Holly kind of shared her feelings about the movie and Michael heard her. Like, this is now two episodes in a row where we really see their connection and that Michael is close enough to her that he can hear what she's saying and not just push it away. And that's not something we've really seen in Michael before, right? He's gotten these complaints from other people. People mocked his movie. But it wasn't until Holly says something that he takes it seriously. And I think that's great for his character.
And I think the way Holly puts things too to Michael is that she really does spare his feelings. She doesn't just say the thing that you like is stupid. She does it delicately and she makes sure that Michael is connecting with the things that he likes appropriately. Whereas before, we've seen Michael connecting with the things that he likes to, like, such an extreme that it pushes everyone away or he can't ever see or hear or think about anything else. But Holly has a way of showing Michael, being like, hey, look, I'm so glad that you are into, like, the previous episode. I'm so glad that you are into this movie.
Yeah.
And it means a lot to you. But I think you should like it for what it is, like at a different level than what you have it. Don't take it so seriously. And Michael was able to realize that, adjust his, you know, expectations of everything. And then he ended up enjoying it even more in the end. And I think that's the same thing with Todd. Not that he's going to enjoy Todd even more, but, like, I think that's the same thing here where Holly addresses that Todd isn't the best person here. And maybe you should kind of look at that a little bit more critically. And I think Michael does in the fact that he takes Packer down to Hank's and they have a little sit down. And again, now we're seeing Michael be a great manager, right? He talks to Todd, you know, he is not throwing any, like, oh, Holly said this or making anything extreme. He's just laying out the facts.
You're very charming. You know what? That is something that you should take upstairs and use on the people that really matter.
Why?
I don't know. Holly mentioned that there were some complaints and that you had said some things about Kevin.
Holly said that?
Yeah.
She was laughing hysterically the whole time.
I guess you said something weird about your daughter?
She asked me, Michael. Oh. It would have been rude not to answer.
You've been on the road a long time and you've been an outdoor cat. And now you have to be an indoor cat. So you can't be peeing all over the walls.
I love the way that Michael addresses Todd here. He really, he is definitely his boss in this situation. He's not being steamrolled by him in any way. And he's telling him, look, these are the expectations that we have with you being in the office. And for the first time, we see Todd reacting kind of in a normal human, like, good person way, where he apologizes to Michael. He is calm. He is articulate about what he was going through. He, you know, kind of moves on and is like, oh yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, I don't think Todd Packer's playing Michael in this scene here. I don't think that he's just trying to, like, get by. And because I feel like in the past, Todd Packer never respected Michael before.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I kind of see, like, a much more respectful conversation going on at Hank's. I don't think it's Todd being phony. But I think when they come back up into the office and Michael is trying to get him to apologize, I think that that's again when Todd fails, and he can't be that better, bigger person in front of everyone else. He still needs to be that, like, awful performer, and he ends up failing in his apology. But I mean, how do you see the scene in Hank's little Hank's cafe down there? I at first thought it might have been Todd being kind of like fakely apologetic, but I don't think so. I don't know. He does it too well.
I'm really conflicted on it. I tend to think that you're right, that it is a moment of actual honesty, but those moments are so fleeting for him. Like, he just can't do it in front of everybody. But at the same time, like, I could see Todd, like, trying to just pave it smooth, and, you know, maybe he's relying on, like, their years of friendship, or, you know, what Michael thinks is friendship. Because I agree with you, I don't think they're actually friends. So I don't know. I tend to agree with you, but I could totally see it the other way as well. And they kind of come back upstairs, and Michael thinks, okay, Todd's gonna, like, turn over this new leaf. He's gonna make a big deal of Todd apologizing to people. But it doesn't stick.
You ready for this? Are you ready for this? Gentlemen, start your engines.
I'm sorry if you were offended by my comments earlier.
Well, like I said, I wasn't offended, but I'll stand here for Kevin, the big show.
Kevin, do you accept the apology?
Don't do it, Kevin. That's a fake kind of apology.
Okay, go back to the annex.
This is textbook. It's so uncool. Ryan does this to me all the time. Like it's some offense to have feelings. Don't do it, Kevin.
Sometimes you overreact. Michael, how is this supposed to work? Packer's going to keep saying terrible things, and then he's just going to make half-assed apologies, and we're back to square one.
Okay, you want an apology? Here goes.
And that's really when Todd kind of goes after Kevin again. He's very sarcastic. He calls him a skinny genius. And Michael steps in to defend Todd, saying, look, Todd has had lots of bad things happen, right? Meredith, his distance with one of his children. So Meredith's other child comes up that we've talked about before. You know, Andy, he also hasn't lived up to his parents' expectations. You know, he's trying to generate empathy for Todd, but the staff have enough water under the bridge of Todd that empathy is not something they're going to easily go to.
Yeah, because Todd quickly shows his true colors. Like, even though Michael is trying to foster these relatable connections between Todd and the staff, like, it doesn't last, because I feel like Packer's just not even able to make that apology. And as like you said, Kelly points out, he makes the one of those terrible apologies. I'm sorry you felt that way. Like, awful, awful, awful.
Yep. That's not an apology, people out there. Just
no. Just, yeah, get that into your, that is not an apology. That's something else. That's deflection. So we have Michael dealing with Todd in this one way. And then we have Dwight and Jim attempting to deal with Todd in another way.
I really think we should join forces on this one. Really? What do we think? What would drive him crazy?
So I like these two contrasting approaches. And it begins with Dwight attempting to mildly poison Todd Packer with some tainted hot chocolate.
So this hot chocolate thing with Packer.
None of your business.
Well, you know you can't actually poison him, right?
It isn't poison. It's a laxative. People take laxatives all the time. This is just a lot more of a laxative. Let me handle it.
And Jim says, hey, we should team up, you know. They have these years of pranking each other. If we combine our energy. And Jim comes up with this thing of, like, we can make his drawer stick. So when he tries to open the drawers to his desk, he can see the stuff, but he can't get to it. Dwight mocks that and says, you know, give me a list of your best ideas, and it sort of unfolds from there.
I do like how the sticking of the drawer comes back and bites Dwight, because he does kind of crap all over this idea and says, like, no one would find that annoying. And of course, there's a glimmer in Jim's eye, and he certainly deploys that prank to Dwight and annoys him in the process of them working together to get rid of Todd. And I love that they put that in there. I love that Jim just kind of looks at the camera, walks away while Dwight is trying to unstick his drawer.
Damn it. Just when we were getting going.
But it doesn't end there. They do end up working together, and we later on overhear them, as Michael overhears them, on the phone with Todd, pretending to be executives from the Tallahassee branch, and they are offering Todd a cushy new job down in Tallahassee.
Well, thanks. We'll do.
Absolutely. Now, when you get down there, Joe's a little bit forgetful, so she may have locked the gate, but what you're going to do is go ahead, hop it, and just head back to the pool.
That sounds weird.
It is weird. Look at you, perceptive. Now I know why Joe's kept her eye on you.
Michael overhears.
What are you doing?
All right, so just pack
your
bags.
Very important client.
And be sure to bring those swimming trunks. Bye now.
Bye. I cannot believe this. You're sending Packer to Florida? Why?
You gave him my desk.
Michael says that he's going to reveal to Todd, because, like, that's not right, that, like, you can't do that to him. As Todd enters Michael's office, before Michael even gets a chance to reveal the diabolical plot that Jim and Dwight had concocted to get rid of him, Todd says something totally distasteful about Holly.
I'm going to tell you something that none of these people have the stones to tell you. It's your girlfriend. She's uptight.
Sorry?
I know this stuff can hurt, but I wish someone had said something to me about my ex-wife.
Michael stops in his verbal tracks, but right before telling Todd what was going to happen, and he kind of lets Todd just continue assuming that he has this job in Tallahassee.
Gonna put the ass in Tallahassee.
Michael, seeing that there's someone in the office who's looking out for him, and someone who is kind of stirring the pot and talking bad about people in a different kind of way, and the person that needs to go is Todd.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I like the way that it unfolds, because it's Todd is responsible for his own undoing in a way, like he just can't help himself. And after this conversation down at Hank's, it leads to this, where Todd is saying things and treating Michael in a way that he has before. And he lets him go.
So Todd is off. He is going to celebrate early, this time without Michael, and he drives off. And then we're left with this great scene of Michael and Holly together.
I'm sorry about your friend.
No. He's an ass.
You are.
You are.
What are you, wicked smart?
Oh, you are.
The hoo-ah.
Hoo-ah.
Michael is clearly choosing Holly here. He's clearly choosing this relationship and this love and, you know, moving forward in his life, as opposed to the offer that Todd Packer gave him on the way out, where it's like, come down to Tallahassee and we'll go get some strippers. And he's like, yeah, that's not who I want to be. Like, you know, he sees Todd Packer as representing, you know, the old way he admired life. And now he just finds that to be not what he wants at all. He doesn't idealize that the way Todd continues to.
Yeah.
And I'm really proud of Michael here. We're seeing, again, Michael taking those steps into taking control of having a better, more stable, more like serene future that he's been wanting for himself for a very long time.
Yeah, good for Michael here. It is in a way, the last big thing in Michael's past that he has to move beyond to be with Holly. And now he's done it.
So we also have a B plot.
We do. It's a great one.
It is a great one. There's a new computer involved, which I think you can talk about maybe a little bit.
Yeah, it's a 20-inch iMac. Good choice.
This is a sick computer. Gwen Stefani has this computer.
And it's nice in an office full of antique vintage computers. So Aaron and Gabe come in late. He fell in the shower and the firefighters took a long time to get him. I'd love to know more about what happened to Gabe. He seems fine, but you know, maybe just wanted to get checked out. And Aaron has this new iMac at her desk, thanks to Pam.
I got Aaron a new computer because the one at reception sucked. I should know. And I don't want to say the other one was old, but its IP number was 1.
Did you laugh? Did you LOL at that one?
It's terrible. There is an undercurrent that doesn't really come out, but like you definitely sense it, that she maybe has a little favoritism towards reception. And she knew how bad that computer was. And so she got Aaron a new computer. But Andy in particular is not happy about this. He's trying to show off a boat video that no one else cares about. And it keeps freezing. And the computer's just old.
Yeah, but if you donated my computer to Africa, it would become famous as the slowest computer in Africa.
Okay, Andy. It's not great. He's angling for a new one. And Pam's like, look, reception is a one-person department. But if I get you a new computer, I've got to get a new computer for everybody else in sales. And we just don't have the budget for that. Which, like, yeah, like, you know, I could see that, you know, having run IT departments in the past, that is kind of how it works. It's all about budgets and allocations. And Andy just, this is not going to work out for Andy.
I feel a little sad for Pam in the beginning of this episode, because she is kind of riding this little bit of a high that she feels good that she helped out Aaron and she made her so happy. And right away, it kind of like turns around to bite her, because Andy is then all of a sudden throwing his childish dissatisfaction right in her face. And it's like this wonderful thing that she felt good about doing, and like being able to help out someone in the office by like upgrading their everyday work terminal. And then it all comes crumbling down because Andy just won't let it go how crappy his computer is. And I think Andy's being super childish here.
He is.
And I also hate that. So Aaron sees all of this going on, the back and forth between Pam and Andy, and she feels bad about it. And so she has like this wonderful new thing. And so she offers it to Andy, which that's a really like nice, pragmatic person thing to do. But at the same time, I understand why Pam gets angry at this exchange, because Andy should have never accepted that. Like, he should be happy for Aaron for having a new computer. And instead, he like willingly takes Aaron's new computer and is like, yeah, sure, I'll take that new computer. I do want a new one. Like, that just stinks. I think that's such a terrible like personality highlight on Andy here. And now I understand why Pam gets super mad at that. And Andy's telling her to calm down, that she's overreacting. And it really is like Pam is kind of the mom here, balancing out like two kids. Like, one kid got something that was nice. Another kid's like, I want the new shiny. And it's like, it's not your turn yet. And there's just this whole back and forth. And she ends up kind of caving to Andy because he just won't let it go. And even though it provides for a funny little back and forth, we get Pam is trying to figure out a way to get Andy this computer. I'm just always so mad at Andy during this entire B plot of like, come on, man, just like grow up. Not everyone's getting a new computer. Why are you the special one that like wants a brand new one? I just get mad at him the whole time. But Pam tries her best to make it possible for Andy to acquire a new computer.
Yeah. I mean, there's this like whole scene where they're arguing about it on the floor, and later he tells her that she shouldn't have done that. She embarrassed him. He's being a tool. And, yes, you know, maybe Todd
Packer's presentation tool.
Todd Packer's rubbed off a little bit on him, I guess. So to speak. And they sort of come to an understanding that, look, I can't get you a new computer unless yours breaks. And so we get this little montage of Andy doing lots of terrible things. The one that absolutely killed me was like a slice of round bologna covered in mustard that he puts into the CD drive. I think I screamed a little bit. I guess
it
works.
It's so funny how well that fits, though.
It's so good.
It's so good how perfectly shaped the bologna is, and it just popped right in.
Don't try it at home, is what we're saying.
Try it at home.
No.
Take pictures and show us. Do it.
Don't do that.
Who has a CD drive anymore? If you still have a CD drive, you should be putting bologna into it.
Wow. Just
saying.
Like a true Apple elitist.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, not sorry.
They said, talking on a Mac Pro. And they get a new PC. We catch a glimpse of the boxes outside the recycling bin. Pam should do a better job at covering her tracks. But they're in a car, I guess, after they went and got it, and like trying to like rough it up. So they put stickers on it, they scratch it, she breaks a little piece of plastic off.
We should break this hinge, maybe.
Let's not go crazy.
And they do this whole song and dance in front of everybody. No one's really paying attention, I don't think, but something does catch Daryl's attention.
Come on, Andy. I mean, you said you wanted a computer. This is the best I could do.
Where'd you even find this thing? Like in the corner of the warehouse?
Yes, I found it on a shelf in the corner of the warehouse.
Daryl knows better.
Critical mistake right there. And I really like how Daryl plays this, where he overhears. It is a quick camera shot of Daryl like kind of perking up when he hears Pam say, I found it in the warehouse. And later on, at the very end of the episode, we see Daryl kind of just side talking to Pam and being like,
so Andy's new computer you found in the warehouse.
Yep, lucked out.
Yeah, you really did. Because I know every inch of that warehouse.
Yep, super lucky.
Maybe you go back down there and see if you can find me some extra sick days.
I like how he does this. I like how he plays Pam a little bit here. And Pam sees what's going down and she accepts his terms.
You know what? I think I saw one sick day.
I think maybe I saw five.
Three.
I like Pam's final little confessional to the camera that she's full on corrupt now.
Full on corrupt.
I'm full on corrupt.
It's a great B plot. I really enjoy it.
One thing we didn't mention was the modding of the conference room.
Pam, can I talk to you in private?
I don't know if there's really a private place in this office.
Well, I put a sign up sheet on the conference room and I signed us up for 3 mods. A mod is 5 minutes and it started 2 minutes ago. So
you did that?
Can we talk about this in the meeting? Because we're already late.
Okay.
It's a total little tiny thing in this episode, but it... Okay, I paused on the sheet, the sign-up sheet that Andy says that now he is breaking conference room time into little slots so people can use the conference room for different things throughout the day, which is a good idea. Even Pam's like, when did we start doing this? She doesn't hate it. What I hate about this is when I paused and I looked at the sheet, the time is so short and I'm really upset how everyone signed up for it. I understand it's a comedy show. I understand it's a joke, but it just still really upsets me how illogical it is. I can't take it.
It's like all spread out in really small chunks. It's not good.
But like, why is the jam session like for 5 minutes, like 10 minutes apart? It's like, why? But Kevin signed up for a nap, and that's Phyllis good. Signed up for 5 minutes of knitting. So, you know.
That's nice.
Mm-hmm. And Ryan's jam session.
Ryan,
which
yeah.
involves Hank, apparently.
I know. Yeah, there's a whole band coming in.
Hey, cats. We got a jam session in mod 6, 9, and 12.
And before we close, we have a tiny bit of Creed Closet where we see that Creed has been around for the entire time. Whenever we see the old pictures of Michael and Todd in the middle of the episode, Creed is totally there. And there's also a little indication of, like, you know, we can't wait for Creed to die in order for Todd to get his desk. So that was one of the reasons given that Todd needed Dwight's desk.
We have been thinking about where Packer should sit. And we can't just sit around waiting for Creed to die.
Poor Creed.
He's gonna outlast everyone. You just watch.
That's probably true.
That's most of the episode. Yeah, we covered it.
Yeah.
We have Todd. He's there and gone again. And Andy has a new computer, as we hear from the glorious Windows startup noise that we hear chiming throughout the office as Andy tries to discreetly smile. Daryl walks away with some extra vacation days. Pam's corrupt. And Michael has, once again, chosen Holly.
Yeah, a very straightforward episode. And I think a very solid one.
And we got some Jim and Dwight pranking, which always makes for a perfect office episode. I hate when they don't have it, although I understand it can't be every episode, but I do love when it's there. And even though now it's getting more and more subtle, I still appreciate when they throw in a nice Jim prank.
So what's next?
So we will be back next week talking about the episode Garage Sale, episode 19 of season 7. Oh, this is a good one.
It's very good.
I'm gonna have a moment now just thinking about it. But yeah, I'm very excited for Garage Sale next. So we'll probably go long on that one. That's what she said. No. Anyway, you can go and find us over at tall_beats, and you can find us individually at ISMH and at Tiff Arment. You can go and sign up and become a member of The Incomparable and join our conference room, members only Slack, where we chat about The Office and post links and all that kind of stuff. And you also get access to members only bonus feed of everything over at The Incomparable. And also remember that this is Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, as Stephen said in the beginning of the episode. And we have a link in our show notes where you can go and donate to St. Jude, which is a very, very special cause, especially to Stephen, also to me. And I think that you should definitely go and click that link before you listen to our next episode, because that would be great. We'd appreciate it.
That would be awesome. Thank you so much.
And did you know I'm a huge alligator nerd?
I'm a huge alligator nerd. I can name you every genus, every subspecies. Also, I'm a huge boob nerd.